السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ومثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم ابتغاء مرضات الله وتثبيتا من أنفسهم كمثل جنة بربوة أصابها وابل فآتت أكلها ضعفين فإن لم يصبها وابل فطل والله بما تعملون بصير. أيود أحدكم أن تكون له جنة من نخيل وأعناب تجري من تحتها الأنهار له فيها من كل الثمرات وأصابه الكبر وله ذرية ضعفاء فأصابها إعصار فيه نار فاحترقت كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. ثم أما بعد. Once again everyone, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We are now moving on to the next two parables in the series of parables that Allah gives about spending in the path of Allah. Just a quick reminder, the first of them was about a seed turning into 700 seeds. We talked about that in some detail. The second parable that Allah Azza wa Jal gave was about a, it's slipping my mind, the, what was it? Remind me somebody? Oh no, sorry, now it reminds me, the boulder. The boulder that slips away. When the heavy rain falls and the boulder is exposed, that is the parable for two groups of people. One group of people are the ones that show off when they give, they show off to people, ri'a'an nas. And the other group that was actually originally being talked about was the one that invalidate their charity by man and adha. Meaning they impose on people, they remind them that they've done them a favor, they give them a sense of superiority or make others people feel inferior because of the favor that they've done to them and use hurtful language after having given charity. Both of those are null and void. It's as though you grew an entire garden on top of a boulder that's going to get exposed when heavy rain falls. A lot of scholars say that the heavy rain in these parables, which is the next one coming also, is a representation of our good deeds. That the heavy rain is actually what's being represented as our good deeds. And those good deeds that were supposed to be a means by which your investments are furthered, your good is furthered, but those deeds, because they were hollow, were a means by which the hollow rewards were exposed. There was nothing left for you to gain. Now we get to this third parable, which is a beautiful one. It's about those who genuinely spend in the path of Allah with good intention. So he says, وَمَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ إِبْتِغَاءَ مَرْضَاتِ اللَّهِ وَتَثْبِيتًا مِنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ. This is really interesting. And the example of those who spend their monies in order to please Allah, in pursuit of the pleasure of Allah, or in order to make Allah happy. That's, you can look at, you know, the meaning in a number of ways. And then he adds, وَتَثْبِيتًا مِنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ, which is a unique phrase here. He says, not only do they spend to make Allah happy in pursuit of Allah's pleasure, but also in order to give firmness within themselves. To make themselves firm, to put it in simple English, to make themselves stronger, to make themselves firm. So what do these two things mean? One way of looking at it is, you've got two problems in the previous parable. One problem was, لا تبطلوا صدقاتكم بالمن والأذى. Don't invalidate your charity by reminding people, by imposing your favor on them, right? By basically being obnoxious about it after having done a favor, right? That was one problem. And that's not a problem necessarily at the time of charity, is it? That's a problem that can happen a year later, 5 years later, you just happen to see someone and the way you look at them, I mentioned this stuff to you yesterday. So it's not just that you give an act of charity, you must now maintain a certain kind of careful etiquette with the people that you helped so they never feel like they're under your thumb because you helped them. They never get that sentiment from you verbally or even by nonverbal cues. The other problem that was mentioned was when people give charity, you know, كَالَّذِي يُنْفِقُ مَالَهُ رِئَاءَ النَّاسِ. Like the one who gives sadaqah or spends his money just to show off to people, look how big a check I wrote. Or, you know, sometimes unfortunately you meet people like that. It's not, hopefully that's not their intention, but Sometimes like when I traveled, especially back in the day when I used to travel, not a lot of people knew who I was. So I'd end up in a masjid and somebody would randomly come after Jumu'ah and say, Assalamu alaikum, my name is so-and-so, I'm the president of this masjid and I started it. And, I donated the land that, you know, this masjid is on, etc. Well, I didn't need to know that. Allah already knew, but thanks. You want me to give you a cookie? What do you want to do? Like, because I don't reward you, Allah does. You know, but there's a need to let people know what I've done or how much I've given, etc., etc., right? So, unfortunately, that's ria and nas, showing to people. And of course, we know the famous saying of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam: "Man salla yura'i faqad ashraka, wa man sama yura'i faqad ashraka, wa man tasaddaqa yura'i faqad ashraka." Whoever prayed showing off has done shirk. He's associated someone with Allah. You pray for Allah, but your prayer changed because you observe somebody's walking by, or you started reciting more slowly, or whatever else. That's shirk. Your prayer cannot be influenced in any way, shape, or form by people. It can't be. The same way fasting. Fasting is hidden by nature anyway, but if you have to go out of here and say, oh, Monday, Thursdays, man, it's hard. Why is Monday, Thursday? Because, oh, you know, I fast. It's pretty Sunni over here. So like, when you do that, then you feel the need to get credit or appreciation. And then the third of those is, وَمَنْ تَصَدَّقَ يُرَائِي. And whoever gave charity to show off. Whoever gives sadaqah to just expose to people how generous they are, they've done nothing but shirk. They've associated a part, that's a high crime. So here, the reason I brought those two crimes up, once again, to be a terrible person after you've given charity, or have the wrong intention even before you gave charity. Both of those problems. You contrast those now with the two phrases here. One of them is, ibtigha'a mardatillah. The one who spends their wealth in order to please Allah. Which is directly in contrast with what? In order to show off to people. Isn't it? On the other hand was someone who, though they gave charity, later on were not able to hold on to the etiquette necessary to keep that, make that charity valid. They later on reminded people that they had done them a favor. Later on they, you know, they said hurtful words or whatever it was, or they asked them of favors. Like I was mentioning to you yesterday. Like, you know, you gave charity, you helped somebody out, and now you feel like you can ask them for whatever favor. Hey, I know it's 2:30 a.m., but, you know, I really need this drill, you know, to be, a nail to be drilled into my wall or something. Can you come over? And this person feels like, well, you did pay for my tuition, so I don't know if I can say no. Sure, I'll come. Because if you say no, they'll be like, oh, I see, okay. You know, when you needed my money, then you were readily available, but now that I need you a little bit of plumbing, you've got a problem, you know. This is mannan. This is one of the meanings of man. لَا تُبْدِلُوا صَدَقَاتِكُمْ بِالْمَنِّ وَالْأَذَى. Expecting favors from people after you've given them sadaqah. That's part of the meaning. خَيْر. Here he says تَثْبِيتًا مِنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ, meaning making oneself firm. In other words, not wavering. Your behavior towards everybody is the same, and you gave sadaqah. While, and part of the reason you gave it is to make yourself stronger. So let's understand now this contrast. How do you make yourself stronger? On the one hand, you give the wrong reason, you give to gain influence over somebody. The flip side of that is, you gave to someone who not only never does you any good, but they also do you bad. But they deserve financial help, they deserve some other kind of help, but they're not very nice. And they're not exactly the kind of people you would want to even associate with. But you only gave because you know now, giving this person, nothing in, socially speaking, there is no reason for me to give this person. I don't even like this person. But now I'm only giving it because it's absolutely clear to me that I'm giving this for who? For Allah. This is making myself firm. You know, I was telling you when we were talking about Ghani and Haleem yesterday, that Allah is wealthy and Haleem. Allah is independent and He's patient, forbearing, puts up with people. When He gives, He doesn't discriminate between the people who are good to Him and people who are not good to Him. He gives them. Now, this is tathbeetul anfus. How we become people of Hilm, how we become people that emulate that quality of Allah, that we are going to give, despite our personal discrimination, despite our personal problem with someone, That's going to build tathbeet in ourselves, a firmness inside of ourselves. There is no element of dunya attached. You see, here's the complicated piece that summarizes all of this. Giving charity is letting go of some wealth that you had. But actually, worldliness, being a person of dunya, isn't just holding on to money, but it's also holding on to some of the intangible things that are immaterial, like influence, like credit, like appreciation, like the praise of people, like, you know, these kinds of things are also dunya things. You know, acknowledgement, recognition, these are also dunya things. Tathbita min anfusihim means when you give, you're very clear. And you make sure constantly over yourself that you remain thabit. You want none of these things. La nuridu minkum, there were two things. La nuridu minkum jaza'an, wala shukuran. We don't want any compensation in return when we feed. And we don't want appreciation. We don't want to be recognized. And that, by the way, by extension, is a principle of living in the Muslim community. If you internalize this, many of you are volunteers at a masjid, or you work at an Islamic institution, or whatever else, or help out, or in this space, you have to understand that we operate differently from any other space. When you're at work, and you did extra work, and it wasn't appreciated, that's a problem. Because that's your job. And it should have been acknowledged that you did extra work, and you should have been compensated overtime for it, or your boss should have recognized that you were the one that made the project successful, you were up for a promotion. All of that stuff makes complete sense in the corporate world, in the professional world, right? In the business world, it makes sense. Labor and effort should be acknowledged. When you volunteer for the sake of Allah, when you volunteer to help the art festival together at the masjid, when you volunteer to put a da'wah program together, when you help out to clean up the masjid, whatever you do, you volunteered. And you know, you had somebody who was giving you instructions, sending you emails, making you this, that, the other, and you did everything and they didn't appreciate you. They didn't even send a thank you. And when they came on the mic, we would like to thank our volunteers, especially Abdullah, Abdul Samad, Abdul Karim, Abdul Khaliq. And you're like, What about me? How come my name didn't come up? I volunteered like the most more hours than any of these guys. Now you think about this for a second. If your name was announced, did you become any richer? Is anybody going to come up to you and say, by the way, mashallah, your name was announced. Congratulations. Can I take a picture with you? That's not going to happen. You did not gain any social clout. You did not become any wealthier. You just felt better about yourself. That's also dunyawi. That doesn't mean that you gain something material, but even recognition can become something that takes over a person's mind. Right? That's part of tathbita min anfusihim too. Not only am I letting go of my wealth, and I don't think twice about it, I don't wonder, oh man, I know I wrote that check. If I just wrote half that check, I could have bought that other thing with it too. You know? That's part of tathbeet, but the other part of tathbeet is you're not looking for any non-monetary, non-material influence or benefits or advantage or even feeling better about yourself in the eyes of people. You want none of these things. This is tathbeet min anfusihim. So now this parable that's about to be given is going to become, inshallah ta'ala, much clearer. Incidentally, mardatillah, ibtigha'a mardatillah is the second time the phrase occurs in the surah now. It came before, وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَشْرِي نَفْسَهُ ابْتِغَاءَ مَرْضَاتِ اللَّهِ. Among people, there's someone who literally sells himself to make Allah happy. Sells himself to make Allah happy. And it's not an accident that the same phrase is occurring now when you're giving charity. In the first case, you were giving up who? Your own self. And now you're giving up what you've earned. And what you've earned is only an extension of your own self. So if you've previously internalized that you've given yourself up entirely, then giving a part of what you are and the earnings that you have, etc., then that's actually much easier, extension. So, ibtigha'a mardatillah is an interesting progression in the surah. Now, what is the parable itself? What's the example itself? The example of these people that can be mature and only want to please Allah, كَمَثَلِ جَنَّةٍ بِرَبُّ. By the way, تَثْبِيتَ مِنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ, there's an interesting commentary by Islahi that I wanted to mention. Really beautiful insight from him. He says that, you know, when you're at a fundraiser or there's like a gathering and people are being reminded of the rewards of giving charity and how it's going to, you know, we're going to stand on judgment day and it's going to turn into light and all this other stuff and, you know, the ahadith of different sahaba who sacrificed, etc., etc. And then who will give? And then you're like, I'm going to give. And then you're so fired up at the moment, you do it. All of us have those experiences, right? And you're going to give at that moment. Do you feel the same way, and would you write the same amount and pledge the same amount under normal circumstances? That wouldn't happen, right? There are actually some people that only give charity in those moments and never outside of that context. You understand? So when they were emotionally charged and encouraged and they were in the crowd and feeling it, they did it. Otherwise, this is not a normal, giving is not a normal part of their life. Allah is saying on the one hand, somebody did want to make Allah happy that one time. Ibtigha'a mardatillah. They wanted to just make Allah happy and they're like, that's it, I'm going to do it. But there are also other people with tathbita min anfusihim, that there are groups of people that are constant. Meaning, whether there's a fundraising, amazing speaker that's going to get you to give or not, they just have this firmness and maturity within themselves that they continuously give. They don't need the outside motivation to give. That's just a part of who they are. That's just, you know, part of their DNA now. Just like salah is a regular thing, for them giving is a regular thing. That's within tathbita min anfusihim. كَمَثَلِ جَنَّةٍ بِرَبْوَةٍ. It is something like a garden, and jannah is used, hadiqa is also available in Arabic for garden. Jannah is used from jannah, the verb, to cover something entirely. Like janin covers the baby entirely, the womb of the mother is called janin. Jinn is called jinn because they are covered from our eyes. They're hidden. Jannah means the soil is hidden by so many flowers, so many trees, so much grass, so much shrubbery, that you don't see any patch of exposed dirt. The land is completely covered. It's a lush garden, you can call it, right? So this is Jannah. And then he adds, بِرَبْوَةٍ. Rabwa comes from the verb raba. Raba yarbu in Arabic means to rise. From it you get riba also, increase and gain in wealth. From it you also get tarbiyah, rabba yurabbi tarbiyah, which means to raise a child or to develop something, to make something grow. Okay? Now, rabwa means a place, a land that is elevated. Elevated land. Now, this is actually an important consideration. Because the previous parable, where there was a rock and a garden grew on top of it, is actually clearly from the imagery described at the bottom of a hill. Why? Because when rain comes, it floods and it washes it off. If it was at the top of the hill, it would survive the landslide. And as a matter of fact, the only reason soil was able to get on top of the rock to begin with, you know, صَفْوَانٌ عَلَيْهِ تُرَابٌ كَمَثَلِ صَفْوَانٍ عَلَيْهِ تُرَابٌ, a boulder that has dirt on top of it. That doesn't happen at the top. That happens at a boulder that's at the bottom, and then landslide happens, and then dirt comes on top. But now Allah is starting with a garden that's not in an exposed or dangerous position. It's actually at an elevation. Rabwatin. Higher elevation. I'm reminded actually when we don't have that much of a problem here in Dallas, but at one point I was considering moving to Atlanta. But when I was thinking about places to move, there were three cities on my list out of New York. Not Maryland, alhamdulillah, but it was North Carolina, or in Raleigh, North Carolina, or Atlanta, or Dallas, right? And I was looking at homes in different places or whatever. And Atlanta has like this kind of hilly landscape, right? We don't have that problem here. We have other problems. We have no landscape. Or all we have is landscape. So, you know, you get a house that's at the bottom, like the road is going down like this, and there's a house all the way at the downhill, essentially. They're cheaper. They're cheaper. Why are they cheaper? Oh, because when it rains, everybody's problems come down here. You see what I'm saying? Their basement's going to get flooded. Their backyard's going to turn into mush, because everybody's water's going to trickle over here. It's more dangerous land. And the most expensive real estate's going to be where? Top of the hill. Why? Well, first of all, the real estate agent won't tell you this, but first of all, it's the view. And then on top of that, it's actually, it's saved from a lot of the troubles. When rain does hit, it's gonna be, it's not gonna get hit like the other places are. Water will be retained there as much as the soil needs, and anything in excess will trickle down. That's the advantage of a rabwa. So jannatin bi rabwatin, a garden at an elevated location, suggests that it will, even if rain does come, the place won't get flooded. Any excess water will just trickle away. You get it? So that's the first problem can't happen here. That can't happen here. Now, fa'atat ukulaha dhi'fain. So it produces multiple in terms of its produce, its fruit. Interestingly, the nabat of a garden, nabat means produce. Instead of using that word, Allah used the word ukulaha. Ukul in Arabic means the produce that is good enough to eat. Not everything that is produced you can eat. You have trees in your backyard, they have stuff that comes on it, you can't eat it. So you have a tree, but you don't have ukul. If you had an orange tree, or an apple tree, or something, that's ukul, right? He says, now he's suggesting that not only is this a garden with interesting plants or whatever, but it's plants that can be consumed. And if they have ukul, if they have fruits that can be eaten, or vegetation that can be eaten, then we know that they're going to come with seeds. Which takes us back to the first parable, where there was the idea of a seed that is going to be buried. With every fruit will come multiple seeds. Now he says, this, because it's at an advantageous place, its produce is multiplied. I'm not saying twice, because in Arabic figure of speech, this is where grammar stops and Arabic literary, you know, appreciation begins. In Arabic language, when you say something is double, it doesn't necessarily mean double. It can actually mean multiple fold. For Urdu speakers, it's actually very easy to understand. Numbers don't always mean numbers. Especially Urdu speakers get this. 10 ghante se main yahan baitha hua means I've been sitting here for 10 hours. Well, not technically 10 hours, 27 minutes, but it felt like 10 hours. And then, even in the English language, we throw random numbers. Man, I have, this guy, every time he comes to work, he has like 5,642 excuses. You didn't count. I'm sure it's not close to that. But the idea is when you say certain numbers, they express countless. A ridiculous number. Dhi'fain as a phrase is like that in the Arabic language. It actually means it produces way more than expected. It produced a lot. So it doesn't just literally mean double, it can mean way more than double. Okay? So that's atat ukulaha dhi'fain. Fa'illam yusib, this is actually asabaha wabilun. Heavy rain with big drops that I described to you before, you know, adakhmul matar, adakhmul qatar actually, the same wabil that came on the rock that left it barren, the same wabil is coming here. The same heavy rain is coming here. But remember I told you, flood doesn't destroy this land. It's at an advantageous position. So what happens instead? It produces way more than originally expected. It produces anyway, but now it produced way more than originally expected. And then, فَإِلَّمْ يُصِبْهَا wabil, and even if the heaviest big drop rain didn't pour down on this land, فَطَلْ, then even just dew, nada. Nada in Arabic is like morning mist and dew, or a light, light drizzle. You barely feel, not even drops, it's like a spray. Even that much is enough for it to produce. Allah is saying now, it could be heavy rain and it could be just light, light drizzle. This is actually a really beautiful thing to say because it ties to the original phrase for which this is a parable. Islahi argued, remember I told you, on the one hand, this could be that people that are emotionally motivated at a certain point and they give extra to please Allah. And under normal circumstances, they still show tathbita min anfusihim, they're constant in their regular giving anyway. Right? So there's two scenarios. An extreme scenario and a regular scenario. Now look at the example. Extreme rain and just light mist. Either way, good comes out. Either way, good is produced, right? So it's actually paralleling those two. The other thing that's interesting here that comes from it is that when we give, sometimes we give more than is comfortable. A lot, we make a huge sacrifice for the sake of Allah. We, you know, maybe you took care of an orphan or a family member or whatever, and you had to change your plans because of the sadaqah that you gave. You had to change life course because of the sadaqah that you gave. That might happen, and that's. Like, Allah recognizes that sacrifice, and the return on that will be multiplied multiple fold. They're fine. This is actually going back to Wallahu yudha'ifu liman yasha. Right? It's building off of that. But on the other hand, if you just gave whatever little you regularly give, you're like, khayrul umuri adwamuha wa in qalla, the best deeds are the ones that are little and constant, even if they're little, the way you do them regularly. Like, you know, my dad would tell me all the time, whenever you go to the masjid, give some sadaqah. Put something in there. Because Allah puts, you know, barakah in rizq. Until I was like 18, he wouldn't put it in the donation box. He'll give me the thing to put in the donation box. Like he just, that was the ritual. Constant ritual. And sometimes when I come to the masjid with him, he does it too now. He's like, you know, you dal dosme. And I'm like, okay, I'll put it. Right? But that's a regular charity. something you give regularly, constantly, that's like the drizzle. And that's acceptable too. This notion of some who gave under difficult circumstances, gave way more, and it was way harder to give, as opposed to those who gave regularly, that distinction, and both of them is good. لا يستوي من أنفق من قبل الفتح وقاتل أولئك أعظم درجة من الذين أنفقوا من بعد وقاتلوا وكلا وعد الله الحسنى. سورة الحديد. Those who spent before victory came, and those who spent after victory came are not equal. Before victory, when things were very hard for the Muslims, Muslims didn't have much financial resources anyway, giving at that time was very hard. Those people are at a higher rank. But then Allah says what? وَكُلًّا وَعَدَ اللَّهُ الْحُسْنَىٰ. And all of them, Allah has promised the very best. This is a parable for that very best. Either way, whether it's wabil or qal, doesn't matter. And so the beautiful conclusion to this phrase, or this ayah, وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ بَصِيرٌ. And Allah is watchful, and exhaustively watchful, I would say, over everything that you're doing. The word basir requires a little bit of, ironically, insight. Basira in Arabic is two things. It's to be able to see something like basar, but it's different from ru'ya. Ru'ya is also to see. Nazar is also in Arabic to see. Basira actually means to see something for what it really is. Meaning to see something not only with the eyes, the outside of it, but to actually have deep perception of it. Which is why insight, like when you have deep insight into something, that's actually called basira. Okay? So that's why the way the Arabs will describe it is al-basira lil-ayn wa lil-qalb. Al-basiratu al-basaru lil-ayn wa lil-qalb. In other words, there's the eyes that have sight, but the heart can also see. When you see through and through something, that's actually called basir. Now what Allah is saying here at the end of this ayah is, I see what you gave on the outside, I see what was going on in your heart on the inside. I see the inside and outside of it, and based on it I will give you. Just like this garden produces, depending on the amount of water, Allah sees the amount you gave and the amount of sacrifice behind it and the sincerity behind it and the difficulty behind it, and that will all play into the calculation of how much it will be multiplied. Now we get to our final parable. This is in the list of parables, now the last of the parables. There were four altogether. So there was the seed that multiplies, the boulder that gets exposed, now the garden on a high place. This was the most beautiful of the examples. Now we go back to a negative example. And so you'll notice the continuity. A positive example was followed by a negative example. The seed multiplying was a positive example. The boulder was a negative example. Followed by the garden that produces so beautifully under any circumstances, a positive example. Guess what's coming now? A negative example. So there's this A, B kind of continuity to the parables. Now, so he says, أَيَوَدُّ أَحَدُكُمْ. Before we go any further, just to stop here. Wouldn't each of you love, that's how I would actually translate this. Would not every one of you love? I would add a not to it, because in the English phraseology, that's how it would be properly understood. It's not, does one of you love? Or does one of you like? That sounds awkward in English. It's actually, wouldn't any of you love? Isn't this something that appeals to every single one of you? Now the word would that he used here in the beginning, as opposed to yurid, ayuridu ahadukum, does any of you want? Doesn't every one of you want? He said, doesn't every one of you love? Imam Razi took note of this and said, إِنَّمَا قَالَ أَيَوَدُّ وَلَمْ يَقُلْ أَيُرِيدُ لِأَنَّا ذَكَرْنَا أَنَّ الْمَوَدَّ هِيَ الْمَحَبَّةَ التَّامَّةَ. It's complete, full love, intense love is mawadda. Mawadda is what a man has for a woman the day he marries her. Well, you're crazy about her. You know? That's mawadda. وَجَعَلَ بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً. That's, so Allah is describing something that is deeply connected to the hearts and desires of people. In this parable, he's going to start with something that's very, very appealing to every human being. So let's see what that is. أَن تَكُونَ لَهُ جَنَّةٌ. That he should have a garden to himself. That he should own a garden. Wouldn't every one of you love that you should own a garden? And you know, if you don't own a garden now, you're like, I don't want to own a garden. I live in an apartment. Or, you know, I live on the 70th floor in a high rise in New York City. I don't care about a garden. Actually, a time comes, an age comes where even you are going to want what? You're going to want a garden. And it's crazy that, you know, they have these decks, rooftop decks, that are the most expensive. And what do they put up there? Gardens. They put gardens up there. Just to add beauty. You know, the backyard and front porch decoration industry is a huge industry. People put a lot of money in their like lawn mowing and the rows of flowers or whatever else. It's not just an ancient primitive Arab thing. They were in the desert and they were like, oh, I wish I had a garden. I just have sand. It's not like that. It's actually a human desire. And the other thing is that we, you know, when we travel and when we want a vacation, when we want to go somewhere beautiful, we want to go somewhere that's naturally beautiful. And part of that is gardens. Part of that is lush greenery and beauty, right? One of the reasons I'm obsessed with Malaysia. So, أَن تَكُونَ لَهُ جَنَّةٌ. He says, وَجَنَّةٌ مِن نَخِيلٍ. Gardens that are comprised, that consist of palm trees. Now, palm trees, of course, they are a symbol of exotic beauty around the world even today, right? So, you know, if think of a place that has palm trees, you're thinking of a place that's expensive real estate. Those two things go hand in hand. We don't have palm trees in Dallas, right? When you go to California, you start seeing palm trees. And there's a difference. When you go to Hawaii, you'll see palm trees. When you go to these places, palm trees are a symbol of you're near water, you're near beautiful scenery, right? And the climate is very relaxed, the climate is very calm, etc. So palm trees are a symbol of something profoundly beautiful. But for the Arabs, it was a little bit different. For the Arabs, the palm tree was a number of things. It wasn't just the dates that they get out of the palm tree. But it actually, الثمرة يستفيد منها والنواة يستفيد منها. The pit, he will use the pit to crop again, to produce again. They actually used the pit to also make some kind of flour with it too. Then والسعف يستفيد منها. They would take the palm leaf and they would actually use it for stitching and making different kinds of furniture and handicrafts or whatever. So this was a fundamental material for them. والجذع. And on top of that, the stump of it, they would break it up and use it for the roofing of their house. بَعْدَ أَن يَمُوتَ يَجْعَلُهُ سَقَفًا لِبَيْتِهِ. He used to use it so that it would last longer than his own lifetime for a roof over his head. So the palm tree is not just representative of a pretty tree, but it actually represents the most sound, stable investment the Arab could think of. One of the most sound, stable investments the Arab could think of, that even when the palm tree dies, we can use its materials for other things. And we can grow another one from the seed of it, right? So when you're thinking about this garden, don't just think about a beautiful place. Allah is saying, wouldn't every one of you love to have a stable business investment that's constantly producing income for you? That's also being attributed here. The other thing that's important to note here is actually a picture that's repeatedly painted in the Quran, most vividly probably in Surah Al-Kahf. The Arabs had this notion, and ancient societies had this notion, that you want to have the best investment is land and producing on the land. And the way you produce on the land is you make a fence out of palm trees or trees. So around the perimeter of the land are all trees. Because when the wind comes and a storm comes, the brunt of the hit will be taken by the trees and the more delicate plants, like the vineyards. Right? And the stalks, that the plants that can't even stand on their own. You have to put a trellis, a arsh, into the ground and they wrap themselves around it. Right? Which is how grapes are grown also, right? Those are delicate plants. They can't handle winds or heavy climate. So they're put on the inside so that the outside of them aren't just producing fruit, they're also the security for the inside. Right? That picture has already been painted in Surah Al-Kahf. But it's actually a common notion among the Arabs. And so Allah will say, جَنَّاتٌ أَن تَكُونَ لَهُ جَنَّةٌ مِن نَخِيلٍ وَأَعْنَابٍ. It's actually the same formula. Wouldn't you love to have a secure garden with palm trees, with grape, you know, grapes in the middle? Meaning the delicate plants in the middle. And now the problem is, you have trees to give water to, you have delicate plants to give water to, and water transportation is one of the most difficult problems, right? You have a well a mile away, and then you have to pull a bucket out, then you have to have an animal that you can load the water on, then you have to drag the animal all the way back, then you have to take it to every little inch of the land and make sure it gets water if it's not gonna rain. This is especially a problem for the desert climate. They barely have enough water to drink themselves, so irrigating the land is a huge, huge problem. If you've traveled to places that have a lot of farmland like Ohio or Wisconsin, these kinds of places, you'll see those mechanical like pipes that go end to end to end and they're just spraying water constantly. This is a new invention. How do you think this stuff worked back in the day? Right? You literally had to go spray the water yourself. And the water, you didn't just turn a faucet on and water came on. You had to go miles and miles to get it. And even getting the water out of a well was a work. These people worked labor to get water there. What does Allah say? Wouldn't you love to have a garden at the bottoms of which rivers flow anyway? There's an underwater irrigation already in place. Wherever you dig, water comes out. So you can dig multiple pots, multiple holes, water's coming out, and you can irrigate without having to even have to transport the water. So your investment is there, and the security for it is there, and the continuity of it is also taken care of by means of the water being from furnished from underneath. What better could you ask for? You know, لَهُ فِيهَا مِنْ كُلِّ الثَّمَرَاتِ. And then he says, since the water is there, why limit myself to palm trees and grapes? In it, he will have all kinds of fruit. The land is so well irrigated and so suitable for crop, he'll have all kinds of thamarat. Islahi correctly argues that the word thamarat, we translated in the English language as fruits, which we think of as trees and things like that, right? But we don't think of crop as thamarat. But in Arabic, thamarat could refer not only to fruits, but it can also refer to crop. So there are patches of land that are used for farming, like, you know, harvest. Other patches are growing trees and grapes and things like that. All kinds of produce is captured inside a thamarat. All kinds of vegetation is being produced. Now, وَأَصَابَهُ الْكِبَرِ. Now I told you this is going to be a negative example. Doesn't sound negative at all so far. Seems like it's pretty nice. How does it turn negative? He says, وَأَصَابَهُ الْكِبَرِ. And this man, whoever owns the garden, each one of you, then he turns it, instead of, wouldn't you want? He'll say, and he, meaning now don't think of it as yourself. Think of some, that's the beauty of Quran. He says, he became old. He became old. But the parable didn't became, start with, wouldn't somebody want? He said, wouldn't one of you want? Wasn't it ahadukum? So the scenario was, I was imagining I own this garden. I have everything taken care of. I was expecting Allah to say, and then you got old. You know? فَأَصَابَكَ الْكِبَرُ. Then old age hit you. It struck you. But he says, فَأَصَابَهُ الْكِبَرُ. This is actually a rahmah, mercy of Allah. This is called iltifat. He went from the second person, he was talking to you, and switched over talking to the third person, so he's not talking about you. When the example was positive and beautiful, he spoke to you. When it's about to turn negative, he made it about somebody else, so you don't get depressed. He got old. فَأَصَابَهُ الْكِبَرُ. No, you wouldn't want that. You know? So he doesn't want you to imagine this happening to you necessarily. He distanced the problem from you. That's again, رَحْمَةً مِّنْهُ. So now, وَلَهُ ذُرِّيَّةٌ ضُعَفَةٌ. So he became really old. Now if he became really old, obviously the water is taken care of, but it still has to be sprayed. The vineyard needs caring for. The palm trees, when they grow their fruit, you have to climb up the tree to get the fruit. You have to have the physical strength to get up there. You know? He no longer has the strength, because he's old now. He can't take care of this garden. Ah, but you know, if he does, he can't take care of it, then at least he has sons, children. They'll take care of it. Back then, your labor force was your children. You know? أَنَا أَكْثَرُ مِنْكَ مَالًا وَأَعَزُّ نَفَرًا. I have more than you in money. I have more manpower too. And manpower mostly refers to children. But Allah says, وَلَهُ ذُرِّيَّةٌ ضُعَفَاءُ. And this person has offspring. He has children that are very weak. That are inherently weak. In other words, they're too little. They can't do it either. There's already a problem. Not only can you can no longer take care of this garden, it's starting to fall apart because nobody's there to maintain it. If no catastrophe, no disaster happened, then this is already going to be a bad thing. You understand that? If there was nothing further negative mentioned, this is already a disaster because nobody's there to take care of it. He says, he adds, فَأَصَابَهَا إِعْصَارٌ فِيهِ نَارٌ. On top of that, not only has old age hit him, then on top of that, an i'sar hits him. I'sar hits the garden. What's an i'sar? I'sar in the Arabic language comes from a'sara, which means to squeeze. To squeeze. And specifically, when you squeeze something and fluid comes out, that's actually Yasar. That's why the word asir, juice, is when you squeeze the fruit, the juice comes out. That's why it's called asir in Arabic. Clouds that squeeze against each other and it rains are called mu'sirat, from the same word. وَأَنزَلْنَا مِنَ الْمُعْصِرَاتِ مَاءً ثَجَّاجًا. The time of Asr is from the same time. The light is being squeezed out from the day. So the notion of something being squeezed away, you know, that's captured inside. Now, I'sar means a wind, a tornado, some kind of heavy wind that puts pressure, squeezes the earth and starts picking up the dirt. You know? And it's a high pressure wind. And he adds, فِيهِ نَار, in which there is fire. A wind, that's high pressure wind in which there is fire. Fihi nar. What does this mean? This what's called dry wind, hot dry wind. There's a big problem in California recently, a couple of years ago in Colorado also. Dry winds come and they can actually, because of their heat alone, create fires in the middle of woods. And thousands upon thousands of acres of trees burn down. Homes burn down. And, you know, helicopters and trucks upon trucks are trying to put these fires out for weeks, and they can't put it out. I've been through some of that burnt brush, you know, on mountain ranges. It's horrifying to look at. It looks like just endless death. You know, trees turned white because of the burnt, you know, ash. SubhanAllah. And so Allah says that kind of a wind comes and attacks the garden. Now, it was already in trouble. On top of that, it's being burnt down. Now, there are two things here. Actually, first I want to explain the scenery. We'll break for salah. And then I'll come back and explain the sense behind this picture. I want to paint the picture properly first. So he says, when this wind comes, فَاحْتَرَقَتْ, the entire garden is set on fire. فَاحْتَرَقَتْ. كَذَلِكَ يُبَيِّنُ اللَّهُ لَكُمُ الْآيَاتِ. That is how Allah is clarifying His miraculous signs, His lessons to all of you. لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ. So you can ponder deeply. You should think deeply about what I just said, essentially Allah is saying. I'm giving this scenery to you, this picture for you, so you can think about it deeply yourselves. So when we get back, inshallah, now that we've painted the picture, we'll think about it deeply. Or we'll do our best to do so. بَارَكَ اللَّهُ لِي وَلَكُمْ فِي الْقُرْآنِ الْحَكِيمِ وَنَفَعَنِي وَإِيَّاكُمْ بِالْآيَاتِ وَذِكْرِ الْحَكِيمِ.